Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
Okay, James, it is the eve of the season, eve of the 2020-2021 season. What's like your excitement level right now? Is it like a 7 or an 8? Are you closer to 10?
I love the start of the season. I mean, I'm used to it happening in September, and September is when the fall has become one of my favorite months, just because hockey comes back. It's, you know, it's my birthday. It's like you go back to school. There's like lots of stuff that's, you know, I've always loved that kind of start of season. Obviously, this year is, you know what? We've talked about this before. It's not the same without the fans there. It's really not, like, for our jobs. Just the buzz, and like you go into a full building, and you know, the fans all being there in the atmosphere is a big part of what makes the whole thing special. So, but you know, my excitement level is very, very high. It's nice to get a little piece of normalcy like this back in your life. And, you know, I think the Leafs have a pretty good team. I think that they're better than last year. I think that the Canadian division adds a wrinkle to it that's going to make it really interesting and exciting. And it's going to be a short season, which is great. And there's a lot of, I mean, look at the roster. There's a lot of interesting storylines that I'm sure we're going to get into now that it's going to make our job interesting. And we can see on the site, like, how interested people are too. Like, the response last couple of weeks has been fantastic. So, you know, I think there's a lot of pent-up enthusiasm for this team and this season here in the city.
Okay, well, so that's a perfect segue into what we're going to talk about on the podcast. We're going to go through kind of what happened in camp. We're going to play a game that I stole from the Low Post, a basketball podcast, Do You Believe? And then we're going to kind of look ahead to the season and look at some of the expectations on certain individuals. And we're going to talk a little bit about your story today. This, we're recording this on a Tuesday, about Austin Matthews and the transformation of his body. But let's start with training camp, kind of look backward and kind of look forward at the same time. So the first question of the Do You Believe game that I have stolen is, do you believe in Joe Thornton on the top line?
Yeah, no, I would certainly, I believe in it as a worthwhile experiment for the first 8 to 10 games of the season. And, you know, if it's a disaster or if it's not working as intended, then you rethink it. I like this look of the lineup in general better than some of the ones that you and I were playing around with in the offseason, where we had Joe Thornton as a third line center. And I think that there's more, it's a more diverse group. It's a group that's, the different lines have different functions and can do different things. And I mean, nobody's going to be worried about that Thornton, Matthews, Marner line scoring or producing offense. Like, it's going to be effective. It would be effective. Like I said, I think I said on the podcast last week, that line would score with an old boot there on the left wing. And, you know, and I think Joe Thornton's got more left in his game than a lot of people think. So, yeah, I believe in that.
Yeah, I think the functionality thing is kind of the important point here. That's really why, clearly, they've put him there, is they wanted to create a third line. We're going to talk about that third line in a little bit. But they wanted to create a third line that could actually check top lines, take defensive zone starts, just absorb kind of a heavier burden than what they had last year. I'm going to read you the top three lines. Actually, I can read you the top four lines from the opener last year, just as a comparison to what they have now. So line one last year, Johnsson, Matthews, Nylander. Line two, Kapanen, Tavares, Marner. Line three, Mikheyev, Kerfoot, Moore. Line four, Timoshov, Shore, Gauthier. So, like, the top three lines are similar. I think that that third line is better when you take Zach Hyman in place of Trevor Moore. The fourth line is clearly a lot better than it was. But like you said, like, it almost doesn't matter who plays with Matthews and Marner. Like, you saw in that exhibition scrimmage over the weekend, They just look like something else. Like, they're just pinging back and forth. The puck is moving. Marner had the puck all the time. And that was kind of one of the concerns we talked about last week that I wondered about. And you know, we'll still see. But if he's going to have the puck all the time, he's going to be shooting. Like, it almost anything that Thornton adds will just be kind of extra.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people are looking at his last season in San Jose when he was playing with two not very good players on one of the worst teams in the NHL. And I don't think you can read that much into that year. And people are also looking at his birth certificate and saying he can't do it. But I mean, like, Joe Thornton has defied the odds to now. And there are a few select very, I mean, the other thing you got to keep in mind is that Joe Thornton was one of the best, probably three or four players in the world for a period of his career. And the thing is,
maybe
is
the
that,
best at one point.
Yeah. Did he win the Hart? I think he did, right?
Yeah, he won the Hart that year. He got traded to San Jose.
The year he got traded. Right. Analytics people talk a lot about regression and a lot about underestimating how much age can have an impact. But the other thing that they say is that if you start from a very, very, very high ceiling, if you are an Alex Ovechkin or a Jaromir Jagr or, you know, take your pick of the guy, Zdeno Chara, the very best, your diminished age, you know, you can still be a pretty effective player. You know, I still think that Joe Thornton can be a third line player at, was he 41 or 42? I think he's 41.
41.
You can, and you look back, you know, 2 years ago, his second to last season with San Jose, he had 51 points in 73 games, I believe. He played almost 16 minutes a game. He was on the second line. That team went to the third round of the playoffs. That team almost won a Stanley Cup with him in a very, very prominent role. And it wasn't like they were carrying him. He was a very effective player. And that's not that long ago. And there's enough things, if you look at, you know, the data on his year last year, that it looks like kind of an anomaly. And he was playing with LeBanc and Sorensen. And it was a complete gong show. So I think he's going to surprise people, honestly. I think that he's going to be a lot more effective than people think.
Well, anything he does give them is a bonus, like for $700,000. Like it's a no-brainer. And like just while you're talking, I'm thinking about when Patrick Marleau came to Toronto and why you could kind of see the slide. The elements of Patrick Marleau's game that made him stand out in the past, like he's an unbelievable skater. He had great hands. Like that stuff started to slip. And with Thornton, the stuff you're wondering about with age, like he's never relied on his foot speed. It's always just been his body and his mind, like how big he is. And so it makes you think that he can last or fit with those guys just because of how well he sees the ice, how well he passes the puck. And worst case, they have to move him. And if they do have to move him off that line, it'll be interesting to see where they would put him. Unless this Kerfoot line blows up, maybe it's with Tavares. Anyway, let's get to the next question. Do you believe in Travis Dermott over Mikko Lehtinen on the third pair?
Yeah, I do. I don't think Mikko Lehtinen, there was a lot of fanfare around him, you know, KHL Defenseman of the Year, but he was never a guarantee. You know, he's 27 years old. He's taken a long time to get to the level he's at now in the KHL. And to me, I mean, we haven't been able to watch a lot of training camp, which is a bit frustrating because I think we'd have a better handle on all this stuff if we had. Yeah. But, you know, isolating him and watching him closely in that scrimmage, he looks kind of like a European defenseman. He looks like a Calle Rosén or something. He looks like one of those guys that's come over. The adjustment is really, really big. And I don't know if he's going to get it or not. And we're judging on not a large body of work, but he looks a bit fish out of water to me. And Travis Dermott,
yes,
it looks a lot better. I mean, that was my, I don't know what, like, he didn't look that fast, Lehtinen. He looked uncertain. He looked like, you know, the forecheckers were going to be on top of him really quickly. And as Sheldon Keefe said, I mean, they're confident in him on the power play, but right now that's about it. And I think what you do, Jonas, is, you know, you got your first game against Montreal and then you got back-to-back against Ottawa and you got all these guys and everyone's going to be talking about, if the Leafs stay fully healthy, that's great. But it also creates this storyline that, well, why isn't Nick Robertson playing? Why isn't Rasmus Sandin playing? Why isn't, you know, et cetera, all the guys on the taxi squad, why aren't they playing? I think what you got to do, very condensed schedule. I was looking at it yesterday, it's about 10%, a little bit more than 10% more condensed than last year. They're up to 3.38 games per week on average in the league. Normal year, it's like 3.08. So you're cramming in an extra 0.3 games every week. You're going to have some back-to-backs thrown in there. I had my counting on the back-to-back games wrong last week, by the way. I think they have, someone said they had 8 or 9. No, that's okay. It's my fault. I just looked at it quickly and they have 8 or 9. So it's, you know, it's like 14% of their season or something. It's not onerous. But anyway, I'm on a tangent here. They got Montreal first, then they got back-to-back against Ottawa. Ottawa is the consensus weakest team in their division and one of the weakest teams in the league. They're just young. They're rebuilding. It's fine. It's not an indictment of the Senators. But I think what the Leafs need to do is that when they have those opportunities where it's a back-to-back and you're playing a weaker team, give Nick Robertson an opportunity. Give Mikko Lehtonen an opportunity. See what some of these, maybe you can work Travis Boyd in there. They don't have a lot of flexibility up front because of waivers and everything, but give some of these other guys an opportunity. Give them a taste. Make sure they're getting into a game every 2 weeks, and I think they'll be fine. I think that's what they're going to need to do.
Yeah, I started texting you in the first 5 minutes of that scrimmage with kind of alarm about Lehtonen. And like, you don't want to overreact and like, it's one's exhibition, but like, because of how tight camp was and because there's no exhibition games and because it's a 56 game season, you're playing the same teams. Like they can't wait for him to be ready. And like you said, like he just didn't look ready. Like, and you think of everything he's trying to do, like he's trying to adjust to a new league, new competition, new ice. Like there's just so much happening at once, new systems, new coach, that to think he would be able to do it probably was an assumption. Well, I don't even think we made the assumption. Like it's something we've written about that he was no sure thing. I'll be curious to see if you're right though, because I would be a little nervous if I was Sheldon Keefe, even just to put him in against Ottawa, like the first week, because Yeah, but like they can score on you in 12 minutes. Like it can cost you. Like, if that's the tough part is like the only way he's going to get adjusted is to play. Now they might say, well, we're going to get him into more practices and the more he practices with an NHL team, he'll get more comfortable. And that may be true, but like they need to play him for him to get comfortable. It's like the chicken and the egg thing. So we'll see. And, you know, I wonder if this was the plan, James, like, I don't know if you agree with that. Just to kind of motivate Travis Dermott. Like, I wonder if this was what they were going to do all along. And unless, like, Lehtonen blew the doors off at camp and looked like he was so ready to play, that they were always just going to start with Travis Dermott. And this was just a way to kind of send him a message and let him know, like, you're going to have to play well to play.
So. I think too much was made of what they were doing in camp. I think Sheldon Keefe was being honest when he said he wanted to see more of some of the newer players. He wanted to see more of Lehtonen and see how he looked and really get an understanding of how he was going to fit. Like, I think they wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt to see. Like,
sure.
Sheldon Keefe has coached Travis Dermott for the Marlies. He had him for 2.5 seasons. The Leafs, he had him for a half a season. He knows Travis Dermott really, really well. And there are some things that where Travis Dermott can get better that they want to see him get better at. I don't know. I mean, I think the motivation is going to be there regardless. And there's going to be someone sitting there if you have a bad game that's going to be coming in. So,
yeah, but like think of put yourself in his situation. So you come into camp the first day and you're on the fourth pair and some guy from Europe is like playing ahead of you. You'd be like, mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'm better than this guy. Like I'm going to play harder. You're challenging me. I'm going to take the challenge. You may be right. Yeah. Like,
I think that is how he feels. I mean, I think that. Yeah, so you give him a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and you know, I think Dermott feels like he's probably better than Bogosian and Justin Hall as well. Sure. So you know, now let's show it, right? Like show what you can do. So Dermott's got a lot of nice tools, but he's never proven to me that he's more than a third pair guy. And this is a huge year for him because I think if he doesn't take the next step, he's probably not in the organization after this. So, and if he does take a step, then he could be part of the solution for them in the future.
Well, if he has a really good year, it puts them in an interesting situation with expansion as to, like, do you expose Muzzin? Do you expose Brody? Like, do you change your strategy?
I think
strategy?
You do some sort of a side deal or something. You find a way to, yeah, or maybe like you do the 4-4. Or, yeah, well, you make a good side deal, not one of those shitty ones that the Florida Panthers made the last time.
All right, let's move to our next. Do you believe? Do you believe in the Leafs' new defensive trio? So, James, just maybe you can help me brainstorm. I can't do this checking line. I need a new word to describe it. So I'm not using checking line. So I'm just, if you can help me brainstorm a new way to describe that kind of line, that would be great. But so do you believe in blank line?
Shouldn't it be belief? I think you should change the format for this.
No, I don't do puns. I'm not you. Or Paul
Henry. Do I believe? I'm going to have to think about the name. I haven't put a lot of thought into that.
Okay.
I'm trying to do something with the initials and not getting anywhere. But you want a different name to describe like what that line does. Because they're not just a checking
line. Same with the top defensive pair, like the shut. I don't want to use shutdown pair. Like I just. But that's a.
So what about shutdown line? There you go.
Oh, no. Well, that's not bad. That's not
two-way. Shutdown line's better. I mean, the thing I need to see is, do you think that third line gets the toughest competition? Do you think they play against other teams' top lines and they get hard matched? And the problem that one coach pointed out to me from another team, he was looking at what they were doing and he said, well, you don't want to play that line as many minutes as the other team's top line is going to get. So
No. You
can't really... I think it's going to be more like a hybrid situation where they eat some of the defensive zone starts and it's not going to be quite like if the Leafs play the Oilers, the Kerfoot, Hyman, McKayev line is not going to play McDavid 20 minutes a game. Like that's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to give the coaching staff more tools in their toolbox. And you look at that lineup that you laid out there last year, They were kind of in a spot, and you know, some of the people I've talked to around the league watched the Leafs against Columbus, and they said, you know, they didn't really feel like they had three lines that they could trust in all situations. They felt like they had one, maybe two. They felt like they had to shelter too many other lines. And now I don't know if you saw it. I wish I had the person's name. Someone I read this morning took the analytics WAR and GVSA and like some of the new stats, and they ranked every line combination on every team in the league by first line, second line, third line, fourth line. The Leafs' first line came as the second best line in the league. They were behind Tampa. The Leafs' second line came in, I think, fourth, I want to say. And the Leafs' third line came in, I think, fifth. So they had their first three lines came in the top five in terms of, you know, analytics and some of the statistics. The fourth line was not very good. They were like 20th or something like that. I mean, but the fourth line is going to be a kind of a hodgepodge of different guys. We don't know what Barabanov is going to be. But I think that, you know, this goes back to what we were talking about with Thornton, is that if you can spread VC and Thornton out to your top two lines and make the guys that are making all the money carry the mail, you can build a pretty good third line. And I do believe in attempting the top three lines that they've got. I do think this is the right way to go. I do think it's smart what they're trying here. I don't think it's like with Thornton. I don't think it's a guarantee to work, but I think it makes the most sense to start the season this way, because if it does work, the Leafs are going to look really, really good and they're going to be very hard to play. And that's what you want to have.
Yeah, I think it's what you said. It's like, so McDavid, let's say McDavid and his line come out for an offensive zone faceoff. You can give Kerfoot that a handful of times or however many times you want throughout the game. But then, like, you're going to put Austin Matthews in that line out in the offensive zone. And let's say McDavid and his line hop out and it's in Toronto. You're not going to change it. You're good with that. But if you can just get that line to swallow up some of those defensive zone starts a little bit, like, I still think you'll see Matthews against top lines quite a bit. Here, like, you're not really worried either if you're on the road and Tavares is out there for a defensive zone draw. Like, VC and Nylander, not great defensive wingers, although we'll see about VC. I think the real question is Kerfoot. He's really smart, obviously. It's like, is he going to be strong enough to kind of handle some of these guys like McDavid, Dreisaitl? Like, some of these guys are really big, and Kerfoot is not big. He's not that strong, but he's smart, and he's got two of these kind of big bodies with him, and I bet they'll play a lot with Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall. Those are two big guys. So maybe, like, you pair him with all these different elements, and because he's so smart and he can read the play, like, he can get by.
I didn't really like Kerfoot against Columbus. I mean, that was kind of like a physical, grinding team, and I didn't think he had a great series. And, you know, there were... there were concerns in the organization kind of that he is small and that you put him at center. And so he's going to have to prove that he can do it. But I think if you look at all of their options, though, Jonas, like what he's the best option.
They don't.
You know,
there's no other option unless you want Pierre Engvall. And obviously,
no. Pierre Engvall is
dead.
Pierre Engvall can't be your third center. There's no chance. Like, I don't even know if he can be a fourth line center. He's not a center.
Sure,
like, he has never played center. They moved him there with the Marlies for like 10 games. They're like, I mean, they would love him to be a center, but being a center is not just looking the part. It's really the way your brain works and the way you can process things and make really smart defensive reads. And that's not Pierre Engvall. Like, Pierre Engvall is a straight line. I like Pierre Engvall a lot as a fourth line left winger and a penalty killer. That's what he is. He's not a center.
Like a poor man's Kasperi Kapanen.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe even like, I was going to say a poor man's
Grabner.
He's sort of like Mikheyev. Yeah. He's a sort of like Grabner. I think he's an NHL player, but he's not like third line center is the thing I was thinking about when you were talking about which line is going to get the McDavid matchup. The thing now in the NHL is you need two lines that can take tough matchups. You can't just have one because then you don't have enough depth. You know, the teams that have one line that can take tough matchups are not very good teams. So the Leafs are trying to build a second line. And what's interesting, and I don't think it's been talked about enough, and it's probably should be talked about more, is that you have an $11 million center that's not one of those lines. Like, they're talking about, I think they came away from last season in the Columbus series, and I think they're thinking that, you know what, like, Tavares either needs to play with Matthews or Marner, or we're going to have to shelter his line a little bit, which is, I don't know. It's going to bear watching to see what kind of a year Tavares has. But the fact that they have to shelter him a little bit, I mean, that's, I don't know.
Well, you remember his first year with the Leafs, like they played him against other top lines. And it went okay. Like that playoff series against Boston, like the Bergeron line
won
the matchup.
Well.
But it wasn't like a blowaway or anything like that.
There were some games that he in against that line. I can't remember what game it was. I remember I wrote about it the story I wrote was something like, that's why you signed John Tavares, because he had such a good game against. But if I had to guess, I would just think that Tavares's skating and agility and speed was not his hallmark, and it's going to make him hard for him to match up against top centers on other teams as he gets older and as the league gets faster. You know, we're going to get into this when we talk about Matthews, but the NHL just keeps getting faster, and what's prized more and more, not just among top centers, but among defensemen, among everybody, is agility and speed. And it's one of the only professional sports in the league where players are certainly in some positions are getting smaller. You know, most of what you see is guys, I guess in the NBA, are there some guys, some positions where they're getting smaller? I mean,
yeah, well, now the league is getting smaller. Positions are mattering less. Like you can have like Pascal Siakam started at center the other night. Like he's big, but he's not like brute like the old centers of the past. So,
well, yeah, it used to be you wanted to be, you know, 6'10", 7 foot to be a center, right? And then teams are getting away from
and
that.
And huge.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Last one of the you believe, and then we'll take a break and then talk expectations. What's up?
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, like, that's happening in hockey. And I at some point, positions might matter less in hockey too, which would be fascinating.
Oh my God. All right. Do you believe in the Leafs' new power play setup? So to refresh for people, they have broken up that unit that they had last year with the four forwards, the four star forwards together. So power play unit one is Matthews, Marner, Thornton, Simmons, Riley. Power play unit 1A, as I'm dubbing it, is Tavares, Nylander, Hyman, Spezza,
Jonas,
and for
it's
now,
supposed to
TJ
be...
Brody.
It's supposed to be 1A and 1B, not 1 and 1A.
I don't know. I get to decide. Yeah, you're probably right. I'll change that. Okay.
It's supposed to be 1A and 1B.
But then who's 1B? No one wants to be 1B.
It just means you have two ones. That's what the saying means.
Oh, fine. Fine.
I don't know. Like, you know what's funny about the longer... I've covered hockey for a living now for 17 years. And the more time I spend around it, and the more time I spend talking to people in the game, and whether it's people in the front office or scouts or even players, special teams is something different. And I think that in the media, we haven't done a good enough job of writing about special teams in the right way, and just how this sounds really dumb, how specialized it is. But like a power play is not just you just take a bunch of good players and put them. It's what position they're in, and which, like, there can be players who aren't the greatest players at even strength who can really excel in certain positions. Like, they can be a really good net front guy, or they can be really good along the wall. And that's always been the case. Like someone, remember someone like Kyle Wellwood was very, very good on the power play. And like there, that's always been the case where, but I think even more so now, when you talk to people around the NHL about power plays, it's all about like puck movement and getting the goalie going side to side. And there's just a lot more that goes into it. And I know you and I have tried to write about that at some point, you know, some of the technicalities. And it we always joke that if you write about, you know, the technicalities of a penalty kill or a power play, the story doesn't do very well. But there's something to that. And this is my long-winded way of saying it's very complicated to build a good power play unit. And yeah. I'm sure there are some things that have gone into the thinking here that the Leafs are not telling us in why they've done it this way. And I kind of am reserving judgment until I can see it in action a little bit more. It's the social media was kind of outraged when they saw what the power play units were. I would like to see Joe Thornton on the power play units. And the one thing that I heard from talking to people about Wayne Simmonds last couple of years that people would say was, you know, he's not the player he used to be. He doesn't have a ton left, but where he's good is in front of the net on the power play. And that's what people said over and over and over again. So I'm intrigued to see, you put him with really good players. Even in that scrimmage, I thought he made some nice plays in front of the net. Maybe there's something there. So I think what they're doing is like an extension of training camp. They want to see what Thornton looks like with the kids on the power play, and they want to see what Wayne Simmonds looks like in front of the net, and they want to give him a chance.
So I'll be more definitive than you. I believe in this, and I advocated for this, writing about it in the offseason after some of the changes that they made. I just think last year was a really good example of why there are limitations to just throwing everyone on one unit, because we saw what happened. Like, as the year went along, that one unit got stale and you had nothing on the other unit. And I think with some of the stats, and I know Dom like gets upset about this, it's an oversimplification to just look at the numbers and say, well, you want all those guys on one power play unit because the numbers say so. I just don't think it's that simple. And I think a few years back when they had the two different units that were both really effective and both really different, I think that really showed why you, if you have this much talent, build two really good units, because you saw like Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, Kadri, Marner, they had this really interesting chemistry and they were totally different from what you got on the other unit with Matthews and Nylander. And I think you present varying threats when you have two units that kind of operate differently, and you just, you put pressure on the opposition, but you also put pressure on the units each to compete against one another. So some nights like Matthews and Marner and Thornton, like, maybe they won't have it going, and maybe Nylander and Tavares will. And I think there's a way that this works, that you get more out of Nylander and you get more out of Tavares. So I like it. I think it's smart. I do think it's possible they go back at times to that unit from last year, but I think it makes all the sense in the world to split it up. So that's my thought.
Yeah, if you could have three units, you're right. I mean, one of the things... you go into a playoff series against a team like Columbus, and they're going to game plan for your power play to a huge degree, especially when your power play is a big weapon for your team. And that's obviously...
And they have an amazing penalty kill.
The Columbus does, yeah. So
yeah.
The pre-scouts that they would have done, and you know what, this year is going to be kind of like a series of six playoff series spread out over the course of the year, because you're playing the same six teams over and over and over again. So every team is going to see you, is it 9 or 10 times, or 8 or 9 times? I think it's 9 or 10 times.
Yeah.
You're going to see teams like Montreal and Edmonton, Calgary, teams with good coach. Like, there's good coaches in this division. You know, I really like some of, I think Travis Green's a very good coach. I think Claude Julien's an excellent coach. I think there's a lot of smart minds, even if their rosters aren't potentially as good as the Leafs. And I think that they're going to really game plan against the power play. So the Leafs have to step up their game. And having some different looks makes sense, you know, especially if the example you bring up is a really good one. And I'm sure people listening to this podcast, most of you will remember those units didn't look anything like one another. And it goes back to my point of talking about you don't necessarily have to be the most effective 5-on-5 player in the world to be very good on the power play. And, you know, Bozak and JVR were basically a third line on a good team at even strength, but they were elite on the power play. Like they were very, very, very good power play players. And that unit was fun to watch. It was fun to watch their kind of their brains at work while they were on the ice and some of the things they were able to do. And the same for Matthews and Nylander. They did. So I don't know. I think part of the answer to this question is, do you have the cast to pull this off? Because a lot of teams don't have enough players to have two good units. And then it makes sense to stack one. So what the Leafs are going to test here is, do they have enough good players to pull this off? Can that Tavares-Nylander unit actually be something?
I think it can be. I think Nylander's an awesome power play player. I mean, he had 9 power play goals last year, and that was on that stacked first unit. So, like, you wonder if he gets more shooting opportunities. Like, Tavares didn't shoot, like, barely, didn't, to me, get optimized being with those other guys. He didn't have the puck very much. Like, he didn't get very many shots. And, like, from that spot in the middle, like, you feel like he should be really dangerous. And I don't know.
So it's TJ Brody and Zach Hyman, and just for people listening, Spezza. The fifth member, Spezza's a very good power play player too. I enjoyed watching him on the. He was one of the people on the second power play unit last year that actually looked like he knew what he was doing, and that'll be interesting.
Like James, just to wrap up, like this was their second power play unit in Game 1 against Columbus: Riley, Robertson, Kerfoot, Spezza, Kapanen, like. There's not much scaring you there. Like Robertson is the scariest guy there. And like, he was playing basically his first NHL game. So
the only caveat I'll say is that we've seen Nylander on a power play 2 and given the puck to like kind of own it and make the decision in the past. And it seems like he's been very effective when he's been on a power play with Matthews, but when he's the best player on the power play, I can't think of a unit where we've seen where it's been effective. But maybe this.
Yeah, group, but that's
maybe
that's
having
tough
Tavares,
to say, right?
Maybe having Spezza, maybe having, you know, a good net front presence in Hyman. Maybe that will allow they need Nylander to be the star on that unit. They need him to have a lot of the puck touches and make the right decision, and we'll see if he can do that or not.
I think he can be, and I mean, you're looking at like that unit that you're talking about when he was the star of the second unit. That was Barry, Kerfoot, Trevor Moore, and Kapanen. Like. I don't know. There's not enough there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, I want to run through some expectations for the season for a handful of key people within the Leafs organization. We're going to look at Sheldon Keefe, Frederik Andersen, the core four, and Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan. We don't have a ton of time because I also want to touch on your story about Auston Matthews, but maybe we can get to that in the core four section. Expectations for Sheldon Keefe this year. Where do you think they are, given that like this is really his first full season in charge of the bench?
The thing is, the expectations for the team are high, so that puts pressure on the coach naturally. And it doesn't matter if it's his first full season. It doesn't matter if he hasn't been an NHL coach for a long period of time. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. What matters is that people believe this is going to be a good team. People believe they have a very good shot at winning the division. So if they're in a battle to make the playoffs all year, if they have problems on special teams, if they, you know, have a lot of players underperform, people are going to point at the coach. That's the way it works. And so, sometimes it's fair and sometimes it's not fair. And, you know, this is a real test for Sheldon Keefe. And it's been interesting in training camp because he's basically said, you know, like no more Mr. Nice Keefe. Like he's been much more of a taskmaster than we saw last season. I think that there is a, I was going to say nasty, but that's probably not the right word. I think that there is a very disciplinarian side to Keefe that could come out here if he doesn't see what he wants. And he's going to have to kind of balance that with the kind of friendly players coach persona that he also has. So I think it's a fascinating question. I think that his ability to innovate and to change things when things aren't working and to try unique things is going to come into play here. And whether or not he hits on the right things and pushes the right buttons is going to be a key part of the Leafs season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see like how he does keep that up throughout the year. Like if they have stretches like they did last year, where they're just kind of like moseying along, how he prods them. Like, does that mean, like, he was pretty vocal last year with the media. Like, he could be pretty biting about their play. But what do you do beyond that? Like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles some of the inconsistencies. It's going to be interesting to see if, like, he can get this team to play better defensively. If like this creation of a defensive line, a shutdown line, if that works. It's going to be interesting to see how he uses Frederik Andersen. Like, this is like that's a really touchy kind of thing. Like how you handle a guy in a contract year who's under a lot of pressure to perform. Like it's going to be managing a lot of personalities. And you're right. Like how he kind of goes about that could determine like the success of their season. Like he's obviously very important to what's going on.
What's next?
All right. What's next on my list? Frederik Andersen. And I kind of previewed it. Obviously, the expectations for him are twofold. Like, he needs to be more consistent in the regular season. And he has to have, like, a playoff that doesn't leave you asking, like, why did that go in at that time? Like, you look at his numbers, James, from last year in the playoffs. They're very good. But that doesn't tell the story. That's not what happened. Like, at key moments, he gave up bad goals. Yeah.
He needs to have a better regular season. I mean, he did not. If he would have had a better regular season, the Leafs would have been in a better position and not had to play a team as good as Columbus. And
true. Yeah.
Yes, the backups were terrible last year. Just brutal. The Leafs probably had the worst backups in the league. 5-on-5 save percentage. The Leafs were bottom five in the NHL. And some of that was the backup, but Andersen wasn't good either. They need Andersen to be a top 10, top 12 goalie. And he was not that last year. He had these long funks. And I don't think Sheldon's not going to treat him with kid gloves the way it felt like Mike Babcock did at times. And the Leafs are not going to hesitate to put Jack Campbell or Aaron Dell in the net. They're not. Like I think if Andersen has a really poor first month, there's a scenario here where he's the backup. Or there's a scenario here where he gets traded in midseason and they get a different goalie. I do not think that that's out of the question at all. I think that Andersen this year needs to win back the confidence of his teammates and of the organization, because there's a little bit there's a little bit of a dent in that. He needs to come out and really show his strength that he can do this in a challenging environment. He needs to prove that he's a really good number one, not just a guy who. I don't know. I mean, I feel kind of odd criticizing him because his first 3 years were quite good overall. But
that's where I think you're missing something. The delicate balance of this. He's better than Jack Campbell. There's no evidence to the contrary at this point. So they as much as you're saying, like, if he doesn't play well, like, they're not going to be afraid to go to the other guy. I do think that the kid glove approach played a role in his success the first 3 years, because it helped with his confidence. And you wonder if they're a little more, they're not as patient with him. If that ends up in him being less confident and less effective, and then you're banking on Jack Campbell being a number one on a cup contender. And to this point, Jack Campbell is a backup. And so like, you've got to be very, very careful, like how you handle this whole thing with him. next one. Yep. The Core Four. There's a lot of pressure on them as a unit. I think it's more like the structure of whether this can work. If you can pay four guys that much and have a successful team, what do you think?
I think you can, as long as they are really exceptional players. Like, if they can play up to their contracts, and I would say Matthews and Nylander did for sure last year. Marner had a lot of points, but I would not say that he played up to his contract. His contract's huge, and Tavares didn't play up to his contract. Whether that's because of the injury or whether that there's something more at play and there's an age-related decline that started to set in already, you know, in year two of the contract. I think this is going to be... I'm saying last year it set in.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
This is going to be a telling year for Tavares. I think Marner's going to get back on track. I think that last year was... There were just some things that affected his confidence and kind of the beating that he took in the court of public opinion during the contract dispute. It really weighed heavily on him, if you talk to people who know him really well. And I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be okay. But, you know, can Nylander do what he did last year again? You know, he was on pace for, I think, 37, 38 goals over an 82-game season, mm-hmm. if they would have played out. Like, that's really good. If he can do that again and be that again while not playing with Matthews is another big part of that equation, that's fantastic for him. I don't have any doubts that Matthews is going to have another really strong year. So Tavares is the question mark. I mean, what is John Tavares? Is he the 47-goal guy we saw in the first year, or is what we saw last year going to be more what we see? Because if that's the case, it's hard to justify paying him $11 million.
Yeah, I think he's the one. I think it's really interesting. Like, you look at last year, he was on pace for like over 82 games, like 34 goals, 70 some odd points, which is fine, but it's not like fifth best player, 10th best player in the league. Fine. And I just don't know I just don't know if that guy is there. Like, he's 30 now. Like, he did look pretty good in that scrimmage. And I do think Nylander helps him, but it's really hard for someone like him to live up to that contract. But maybe, like, if he can just be very good and not excellent, that's enough. I don't know.
We're talking about Joe Thornton and, like, you know, extending your window. And, like, look how good Joe Thornton was into his mid to late 30s. Like pretty good. So, and we know
different players, though.
We know that John Tavares trains hard. Like, we know he's all in. We know that, like... I mean, the commitment level that he has is so, but maybe that's not, maybe it's just like everybody's not the same and everyone's game isn't the same. And I don't know, maybe Tavares at some point, he's on the wing, you know, maybe that shot threat that he's got.
That's what I've been saying forever. I think that's going to happen.
I don't think that that's out of the question. I don't think that's out of the question. And the other thing, we haven't talked about this a whole lot. I think Marner could probably play center at some point too. So, they do have options with this group, but I'm relatively confident in that Matthews and Marner are going to have good years this year, and Nylander, I think, probably will too. So let's
briefly talk about that for a sec, James. I wrote about Marner. If you haven't read that, check that out. I think, like you said, he's going to have a big year. I just think the clouds of that contract really bothered him last year. Well, let's talk for a second about Matthews. He's so good. Matthews lost some weight. Why?
that's the really short version of my story. My story is about 2,500 words. I've been working on it. I've been working on it for weeks.
Go check it out if you haven't. It just came out.
So Austin Matthews played last year at about 6'3", 224 pounds, and he's down to about 210. And he lost that 14 pounds over the course of really 4 months, 3.5 months. So it was quite a bit of weight for him to lose in a short period of time, mm-hmm. between when the playoffs ended and December, right before training camp started. The reason why he lost it is that he looked at the training regimen that Patrick Kane did 2 years ago before he had his 110-point season at, I believe, 30 years old, Patrick Kane was at that point, and who Patrick Kane trained with. And it's this young guy from Syracuse, New York, named Ian Mack, who has come up with a very unusual training regimen. Ian Mack was a basketball player. He worked for Canada basketball. He worked for the Syracuse NCAA basketball team. But he's become kind of a guru for more and more hockey players. Patrick Kane was the first big name, but now he's working with James Van Riemsdyk. He's working with quite a few of the Blackhawks. He's working with Kirby Dach. Austin Matthews has become friends with Patrick Kane, and he decided to check it out, and he dedicated his entire offseason to the training plan that he and Max set out for him. And, you know, it was really, really fascinating to kind of get into everything that they were doing. It was, to me, it's almost like it kind of looks like Pilates or yoga or something like that. Like, they're doing like these really kind of, I don't know if you watched any of the videos or anything like that on their website, but it's like he sets up a bunch of hurdles and you step over them really in strange patterns and ways. And it does not look like any kind of off-season training that I've seen NHL players do in the past. But the key with it in talking to the sports science guys and the trainers that he's been working with, the key is they want to make Matthews leaner and faster and more agile and have him be a little bit more explosive and less of just a really big, strong guy that's out there to battle Zdeno Chara. That was the goal of the program.
Okay, so go to theathletic.com and check that out. We have one more, James. I don't want to rush you. Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan. I hate to kind of rush through this one, but we don't have a choice. We're short on time. They need results. Like, I think it's crazy if they would change management after this year, regardless of what happens. But if they don't have results, I don't know that that's the way it's going to go. The public pressure would just be so high.
I think if they miss the playoffs and the team looks really kind of uninspiring, like the way they looked at their worst last year, I think that would create a lot of pressure on Brendan Shanahan. It would create a lot of pressure on ownership. It would be,
yeah,
this can go one of two ways. You know, this team either figures it out and kind of gives their GM a vote of confidence in their abilities, or, you know, it could be a train wreck. I mean, I think last year was a train wreck and they still made the playoffs and they still were able to pull it out of the fire. And like, they have too much talent. So if you have that much talent and they're right in their contention window, Matthews and Marner are 23 years old. Like, now is the time. Now is their time. They need to make good on this. They've got a window here before their contracts are up of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to get something done. And this is a very important year. And as I wrote in my column before the training camp started, they're not a young team anymore. In fact, they're one of the oldest teams in the league. So they brought in all of these veterans to help them out and change the culture in the dressing room. And that's the big bet that Kyle Dubas made. I agree with you. I don't think that they would make a regime change after this season.
I'm not sure that they wouldn't, James. I'm just saying I don't think they should.
Right. It would have to be
the pressure would just be really high. It would have to be a train wreck. It's like you're saying, but like this is Kyle Dubas's team now. Like, you look at the team top to bottom, it's his coach. Like, these are the contracts he signed. He's brought in his defensemen. Like, this is his team. They've massaged it around the edges and tried to kind of balance out some of the weaknesses with more experience, more size, more toughness, quote unquote. They need some sort of result. I do think if they had this dominant regular season, like they were just hands down the best team in Canada and then lost in the first round, I think they could probably, like, the pressure would be high, but it wouldn't be quite as high. Like, that's at minimum what they need. And if they can't get a playoff result.
Yeah. They would need to have a big season and then like get goaltended in the playoffs or something like that for sure.
Yeah.
And you look at the summer last year and the team last year, there was still elements of the GM needing to clean up the mess from what came before. Yes. Like, Cody Ceci's not on the team. You know, Tyson Barry, like they were in a tough spot. Like, they didn't have a lot of cap space to try and fill out the blue line. They're in a better position now, but there's no more excuses. You know, there's no more excuses for Dubas. There's no more excuses for the roster. The division got easier. It should be set up really well for them to do well.
All right. I agree with you. It is our time to go.
But
if you go to wait, James, can you say this? The Athletic, I'm struggling to read right now. some reason.
Well, that's okay. You're a writer. You don't have to read. TheAthletic.com/LeafReport. Sign up today. We got a great free trial on for people. Check out that story about sports science changing Auston Matthews' body. And the other thing I want to say is that, yes, this is a short episode, and we apologize for that. But we are doing another podcast.
Not after really that short, James.
But I get complaints when they're short. This counts as short.
Okay.
But we're doing another podcast after their first game on Wednesday. So you're going to get a double shot of us. And if you combine the two podcasts together, it's actually a long podcast.
Should we call that like the overreaction pod? Because we'll just react to one game, blow everything out of proportion.
Sure.
Yes, for me. Definitely. So check out the comments section for each episode on the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to Leaf Report on Apple. And also, James, there's a new Athletic podcast that people should check out. The Athletic Hockey Show with Ian Mendez and Haley Salvian. I listened to it. It's pretty good. Like, I think it's a good league-wide podcast. So
Ian's
should
so
check
good.
That out.
Ian, so I'm so excited that we hired Ian last week. He's just a wonderful person and a fantastic journalist. So it's like you're a team and you acquire a star to come in and help you. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm very, very happy about it. It's been great working with Ian. And so.
All right. Well, James, we will talk on Thursday after the first game against Montreal. Thank you to everyone for listening, and please stay safe.